Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, and an occasional side trip to Mexico, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah!
Hell yeah!
Now, from the Onnit.com Total Human Optimization Studio, here's Steve Austin.
Yeah, that's right, ladies and gentlemen, Steve Austin coming to you. Not from the Human Optimization Studio, I'm coming to you from a room with Nature Boy Ric Flair. Last episode, I had to cut this conversation short. The show continues today, talking to the Nature Boy, the greatest professional wrestler who's ever lived. I'm going to shut the fuck up. Mo Darwich, fly on the wall, stealth control, running the controls. Back in, conversation with the Nature Boy.
Oh, man, coming back from break. It's hard to take a break because we're talking about Stan Hansen versus Lex Luger, and Stan Hansen with a vicious clothesline, spitting tobacco all over the total package. But anyway.
Well, he was blind. He used to throw me in the rope and say, come on off, kid, I'll give you the clothesline. And that's when a clothesline was a clothesline, right?
Yeah.
One time I had a blade in my hand. And he said, I'll clothesline you, get the blood now, right? He threw me off, he hit me so hard, I had to get a doctor to take the blade out of my head.
The blade got stuck.
He was blind. He's like, he's looking like this. Come on.
I always heard it wasn't such a good, didn't have such good vision. And I was barely.
He couldn't see a foot.
Oh, I was barely in WCW. And I only met Stan a few times, but he was always very nice to me.
What a great guy.
Yeah, he was a super guy. He had such great success in Japan.
Unbelievable. Yeah. He and Brody, they were over like nobody over there, man.
Why was that?
No, and Dorian Terry.
Yeah, you got Dorian Terry. Terry were big in Japan.
Huge Japan, yep. Terry.
God, but let's talk about, Dory Funk, Terry Funk, two great singles wrestlers who could tag. But we're talking about tag team wrestling. We're talking about Arn and Tully, great tag team.
Phenomenal.
Nick and Ray Stevens.
Yes.
Another great tag team. Yeah. Who's another tag team that you liked?
I said Orton and Slater.
Orton Slater.
Over the years.
How about Briscoe Brothers?
Oh, of course, yeah. God, you kidding me? But the rib was with
you
the
got Briscoe. Any Briscoe stories?
Oh, of course they do. I'm with Don Canoodle. Me and Don Canoodle are wrestling the Briscoes, right? So I go to Jerry Briscoe. One tackle drop down, and then give me a hip lock coming off the rope, and Jerry dropped on. I would never try this with Jack, right?
Yeah.
So I jumped on top of Jerry.
Yeah.
Right? And I wasn't there long.
Yeah.
But I tagged in Canoodle, and they stretched Canoodle for 30 minutes. Are you kidding me? Oh, my God.
to my listeners, what's happening is Rick is saying, on tackle drop down, the person is going to lay down face down on the mat while the guy runs over the top of him to continue the spot. Well, what Rick did was jump on top of him and ride him amateur style.
No, I didn't ride him.
Got on top of him.
I was on top of him.
You were on top
for
of
about
him
6
briefly.
Seconds.
and to two shooters like the Briscoes, Jack and Jerry were,
that didn't
you
work.
Did not do that.
No.
So
I got
tagged in Canoodle, got stretched.
I got a great story for you, too.
Go ahead.
Well, Jack Briscoe, we're in Asheville, right? Jack's a world champion. And Jack and I and Jerry were real close, as was Piper and I, right? So I go to Briscoe. I'm gonna bet Piper $100 that he can take you down. Of course, I smartened up Briscoe, right?
Yeah.
So I grab Tommy Young and I go, because we're separate dressing, right? I said, go tell Piper I got $100 as a. He can't take that. But of course, Piper's, I think he thought he could if he, not know what was coming, right? Well, I smartened up everybody except those two. So the curtain is sold out, 6,000 people at Asheville, right? So the match goes on for about 10, 15 minutes. I said, Piper ain't going to try it. Sure enough, he got in and he shot on Jack Briscoe. Wow. So he got Jack's leg up, right?
Yeah.
But Jack has such phenomenal balance, he bounced around on one foot for about 30 seconds, and as soon as Piper got close enough, and the rest of it, Piper never saw anything but the lights the rest of the night. One time I saw him take Matt Bourne, because Matt Bourne thought he was tough, right? And he tried fucking around, screwing around with Briscoe, and he jumped on Briscoe, and about 30 seconds later, Briscoe had him in the angel going, look, Mom, no hands. He stretched Bourne for a mile. Jack Briscoe was phenomenal, man. Holy cow.
Hey, tell me something, because when I think Jack Briscoe, I think singles. I think not only of his brother Jerry and a great tag team, but also think of world championships and a singles wrestler. Mm-hmm. I was reading Terry Funk's book, and Terry's run as NWA World Heavyweight Champion, as you were many times.
Yes.
Terry described, and as it pertained to Jack Briscoe, the load carrying that belt was so extreme that by and large, you know, by the time the run was over, they were ready to get that belt, give the belt away so they could get off the pressure, get off the schedule because it was
Jack
relentless.
Briscoe, it's funny. Jack Briscoe flew into Tampa, and that night he was supposed to wrestle for the world championship, and he walked in at his office, a true story, and said, "You fly Terry Funk in here tonight. I'm done." And so they flew in Terry. It wasn't even an advertised match, and he dropped the title on Terry. He drove back home and drove on top of that bridge. What's that bridge called in Tampa, the big one?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Took off his wristwatch, threw it in the ocean, and never wore it again. Because at that time, Jack was married to Dory. And he would wrestle Dory every city in the country for an hour a night.
Right.
You know, for 2 years.
Yes.
Jack just said, "I'm done." And when he was done, he was done. You know what I mean? Hell, I've been with the Briscoes, man, when we left Richmond, right, to drive to Charlotte, 300 miles, and we got to Greenville before we realized, which is 100 miles past Charlotte, before we were able to buy it. Don't get me going on the Briscoe brothers.
Well, let's talk about the grind, though, because anybody that's been on the road has been there. Certainly you have. How did you survive so long with that belt? Because I've heard the stories from Terry Funk or the Jack Briscoe story. Man, I'm ready to get this thing out of here.
Well,
you thrived on it.
I had about 10 years of the 200-hour, the hour-long matches, right? Those guys were doing 300 a year.
Right.
Not Terry as much as Dory and Jack, you know. Right. You know, I survived because I love the business, you know, and I couldn't wait to get out there. That was my problem, you know. The 200 people or 20,000, I couldn't wait to get out there.
So you come out of the ring, and, man, for me, it's adrenaline. It's a high.
Yeah.
Obviously, you too.
Yeah.
And so, God, man, I'm jumping all over the place here, but now you still let you get back in?
Hell yeah. The corner phrase, hell yeah. I'm ready right now. I can't convince corporate of that, but...
Are you talking to WWE about it?
Yeah. No, I haven't, no, but right. I mean, you know, it's like a joke. 17 times, well, I don't think it's going to happen, but I wouldn't mind trying.
But
John Cena's the only guy I never wrestled.
Right.
Did you ever wrestle John?
No.
Yeah, see, I've wrestled everybody in the business of any recognition except for John.
Well, so then now, how long has it been since you had your last match?
My last match was against Sting. It's been a year and a half.
Okay.
And I broke my arm, but nobody knew about it.
For a shoot?
Yeah, he super kicked me off the top rope.
Yeah.
And for some reason, my arm landed underneath
me. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the last time I wrestled.
So a year and a half. And I remember when I got out of business, it was about 3 years before I kind of came to my senses. Mm-hmm. It took a long time for me to get it out of my blood.
Right, still in my blood.
Yeah. I mean, it's always going to be in my blood, but it took me a long time to get out of my system and realize, to me,
it's over.
Steve, it's over. I got to turn back to a civilian.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, I do the things that I do. I got a lot of good memories. So, but it ain't got out of your system.
No, it hasn't. No, I mean, it's funny because I'm one of these few guys that I've been able to make the transition.
Yeah.
You know, first it was wrestling, then it became sports entertainment, right? And it's changed drastically.
Yeah.
But the marketing has. The guys are making more money.
Yeah.
Vince pays everybody's bills. I mean, he takes care of everybody, you know. And, you know, I just like hanging around. I love the young guys here. You know, I have a ball with them.
You know, speaking of, you know, loving the young guys and loving the business, what was in your career, and I know you have many, many, many high points, but what do you consider maybe the highest of highs? Was it a particular year?
The Four Horsemen.
The
run with the original group.
Okay, so I wanted to
talk about the Four Horsemen. Tully, myself.
What was it about those guys?
Against Dusty, it was phenomenal, man. It was me. We did War Games, right?
Yeah. Say the four names again.
Arn Anderson, Ole Anderson, Tully Blanchard, myself, and J.J. Dillon.
Right.
Yep.
And so you guys started running roughshod. Yeah. Whose idea was it to put you guys together?
Arn's.
That was Arn's idea.
Yeah, Arn's idea. And he came
up with the name, too?
He came up with the name of the Four Horsemen.
Oh, genius.
Yeah, Arn's a genius.
I used to watch you guys, and of course, man, I was somewhere in Texas, and I was watching that stuff go down. And brother, let me tell you something. You guys had some heat.
Yeah.
And it was. Force.
We never won in the arena, but we got a ton of heat on TV.
You got heat on TV. and dude, you know, this was before, I can't remember when the Dr. David Schultz stuff happened, but the business hadn't been exposed. Wrestling was still real.
It was
still kayfabe.
Yeah.
When I watched the Four Horsemen lay down all of a sudden, when you guys broke Dusty's ankle, I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Man, you guys laid down some heavy stuff.
Ricky Morton's face in the cement.
Watched that the other day.
Yeah. How about the time when I jumped on Steamboat? This is, it isn't funny now, but it was funny then. So we shot this angle where I jumped on a Steamboat and rubbed his face in the concrete like I did 10 years later with Morton, right?
Yeah.
And Harley was there. He says, he tells David Crockett, you'll buy some sandpaper. So he took Steamboat up in the locker room, the poor kid, and Harley took that. He didn't take the light grade, man. He took the stuff and he, you know,
cut
his face first. And then he rubbed it. Steamboat's eye was black for a year.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He was so mad at me.
Hey, you was Harley that did it.
Harley, I didn't do it.
Harley was a real deal. Yeah. How much heat did you guys have back then? How hard was it to travel? Because you guys lived the heat. There's a lot of heels in the business these days that are afraid to get hot.
Oh, I loved it.
I did too. But I mean, so you guys thrived on it.
Oh, my God. The only thing about a Harley to drive me crazy, we'd be somewhere and go in a bar, right, and just come on. You know me, I just want to have a couple of drinks and look around at the scenery, right?
Yeah.
Harley goes, watch this. And you go over to a pool table, right? There'd be 20 guys waiting in line to play, and Harley put a quarter down and say, I got the winner. And they'd go, who would you? He said, I got the winner. He always wanted to start a fight.
Well, let me ask you.
I go, come up here. We just come up here and calm down. You know, Harley, right?
Yeah.
Biting the beer bottle.
Yeah.
I can out-chug anybody in the place, right? Now he's betting everybody the bottle. Because some guys can open throat, right?
Yeah.
Harley can drink a beer like in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Boom, right? Then we got that bet going on. I go, Harley, can we just, we're in Texas, man. These are cowgirls. Let's have some fun. Calm down. He always wanted to beat somebody up.
But here's the thing. It was word on the street was Harley was one tough cat that you didn't want to mess with.
You think?
So, but I never heard about him getting in a whole lot of fights. But he was always, didn't you take him to Japan with you a couple times to help you out?
Help me out. They sent him as my bodyguard.
That's what I'm saying.
They sent word.
I want to make sure I have my facts straight.
Oh, no. They sent word that I was, Geigel called me and said, you're going to Japan to wrestle through. They want to switch the belt, but we're not going to do it. So I'm sending Harley with you. So I said, that's nice. What do you mean? Well, I don't need anybody to help. I'm making a joke to myself.
Yeah.
I was glad Harley was going. So Harley was outside the ring, right? And then I went an hour with Jumbo, right? And Lord Blairs was the referee.
Yeah.
And it was really a cool deal. But Jumbo didn't sell nothing. You know what is over there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So we walked back and Harley says, I'll be right back. I said, where are you going? He said, follow me. Watch this. So he walks into Baba. Baba's sitting there smoking that big Roy Tan cigar, right? You know, which was the deal, right?
Yeah.
And Jumbo was there, and he walked up to Jumbo Saruta, and he slapped him across the face. He said, if you ever suplex one of my friends again without him calling the spot, I'll beat the crap out of you. Guess what? Jumbo didn't get up and say nothing. Nobody did the Harley race.
Really?
I'm not kidding you.
Straight up, shoot.
Straight up, baby.
God,
yeah. He walked in there and said, watch this. I said, what are you doing now? I knew what he was doing, right? Whap! He slapped Jumbo across the face open-handed. And Jumbo didn't get up and say nothing. He said, you ever suplex one of my friends again when he don't call it? Because, you know,
you wrestle
Jumbo, you take 40 back German suplexes.
Right.
That was his gimmick. He was an Olympic, not freestyle, but he was an Olympic Greco-Roman wrestler.
Yeah.
And he won a medal in the Olympics, and he was tough.
Yeah.
But not as tough as Harley Race. Kid, watch this.
I remember one time Harley was telling me a story. I guess someone had played a rib on him. They were somewhere in Texas, so he's going to rip the guy back.
Yeah.
And he goes, so what I did, I caught a rattlesnake and sewed his mouth shut and put the rattlesnake in the car.
Yeah.
And you should have seen the look on his face when he came to get his car the next day.
You know
what? And so, of course, I had to say, but Harley, How did you catch the rattlesnake?
I hooked him with the left. Yeah.
Baited him with the right. Hooked him with the left. Right, come on. It's you the know the story. It's true. Oh, if Harley Race says something, oh, it's
hey,
true.
Hey, let me tell you. The two guys that were the most afraid of snakes in the world were Rocky Johnson and Bob Armstrong. Scared to death. And every time Harley came in the territory, he'd bring a bunch of rubber snakes and throw them on top of them. Christ, I never seen that in my life. Bob Armstrong would run like crazy. You know, when Harley was in town, Bob would lock his room. Because Harley would figure out a way. He went and got that damn Boken sticker that what's-her-name had. That we used to call it the Weezerk in Waldorf. It was a dump where we all stayed, right? And the chick that ran the place had a python. And he break down Bob's door and throw that damn python on top of Bob. And Bob slept with a gun. He every time Harley was around, man, and Rocky Johnson, God, Rocky hated him too.
Yeah.
He'd just walk into the building and go, hey, Rocky, how you doing, man? And throw a snake at him. Rubber, you know, but it didn't matter.
But going back to the, I was listening to some of your interviews before I came up here and reading, but one of the things that you liked so much about the horsemen was just the camaraderie, the lifestyle. And like you said, not necessarily hooking up with a chick, but it was hanging out with the guys and the lifestyle. And really, there's a lot of power that you guys had.
Yeah.
You're highly respected, guys traveling around living life.
You know, we just had a good time, and we loved performing. That's what made it good.
Right.
When we got inducted in the Hall of Fame last year, I said, one thing about us is all we wanted to do was go out and perform. You know, it was the truth.
Yeah,
we all couldn't wait to get there. It was just, just a very unselfish, but as a group, and then eventually Ole got sick, so they brought in Luger, and then we had Barry Windham, and Barry was in a class of his own.
Yeah, badass worker.
Yeah, Barry could really work.
Yeah, they're there for a period of years, a couple of years stretch. I mean, that guy had some incredible matches.
6'6", 270 pounds. Barry could work like Steamboat.
Yeah, step off the floor into the ring in one bound.
Yeah.
Four horsemen. One more tag team I want to throw in there that I always really love. Well, two of them. Midnight Express and Rock and Roll Express.
Oh, God, awesome.
Those guys can all work their asses
phenomenal.
Off.
Yeah,
and I don't think they get enough respect.
Yeah, I forget some of the times.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Are you kidding? Bobby and...
Stan?
Not Bobby and Stan. No, Bobby and...
Loverboy.
No, the kid that just quit one day. Just quit and walked off.
Who?
God, Bobby Eaton's original partner.
I don't remember his original partner.
Yeah, it wasn't Stan Lane. It was,
Wasn't Loverboy Dennis Condrey?
Dennis Condrey.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Dennis Condrey. Yeah. I didn't know that was Loverboy. Yeah. Dennis just said one day, I'm gone. Left.
Is that what happened to him? Yeah. Because I love the original incarnation, all of a sudden he was gone.
Dennis just one day said, I'm gone and left.
Why was that?
I have no idea. I always was very close to Bobby Eaton as I am now. Bobby, by the way, just had a heart bypass. Did you know that?
No.
He just had a heart bypass done last week.
Oh, yeah. I heard something about
he's
that.
Yeah, he's had congestive heart failure. He's, Bobby's not in a good
what
shape.
What brings that on, a congestive heart failure thing?
Who else has got it? Jack Mulligan's got it right now.
Yeah.
And it's a heart disease that...
Well, Barry Windham wasn't in a good way about a year ago. Is he okay?
Yeah. Barry had a stroke and a heart attack at the same time on Jack's property. Everybody thought that somebody came and beat him up. He was beat up so bad. And he almost died, but he made it. He actually got out of the hospital, which, by the way, Vince paid all his bills. Yeah. They weren't working for him, right? He just got out of the hospital 2 days in time to come to Miami and get inducted in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Man, I'm sitting here talking to Ric Flair. I'm looking at him. My mind is all over the place.
Yeah.
We got to talk about your feud with Terry Funk. You guys had some classics.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I quit, man. In Troy, New York. Were you there that night?
No, I saw the match a couple times. Yeah.
Terry would let me smack, like you.
Yeah.
Terry would let me smack him. And if the guy would let me hit him, it became real. And Terry would let me smack the crap out of him. He always tells me the story with Terry last week, and he tells the story with the I Quit match, right? He goes, I go, I say I quit. And he go, no. I go, yes. No, yes. That's a true story. So finally I said, say you quit. No. I said, I go, okay, no. He went, yes. So I got him to do it. Then Mood and him kicked my ass anyway, so it didn't matter.
Yeah, but it was interesting, such a different style between Dory Funk Jr., tremendous.
Yeah.
A worker in his own right.
Yeah.
I mean, a badass wrestler.
Yeah.
But such a different style than Terry.
Well, Terry, first of all, Terry was the classic, when he was younger, the classic wrestler, right?
Right.
But Terry is one of those guys where Dory's just a conservative guy, you know. But right. Dory was a master technician.
Yes.
And, man, could he blow you up. He put a hold on you and lean on you, man.
Yeah.
Boom. And then slam, you know, slam me.
Yeah.
Grab it again. Slam me. By the time an hour was over, he slammed him 47,000 times.
But that old lean and veteran
oh,
trick.
Oh, man,
yeah.
He'd lean on you.
Yeah.
One, two. God, it was killing you. And then I had the first time I wrestled Dory Funk Jr., and I had never had that undercut thing, right, which is popular yeah. now with some of the guys. So I'm wrestling him in St. Louis and got him thrilled to death, with, and he backs me in the corner, right, and gave me that flipper and knocked my goddamn tooth through my lip.
Oh.
I never took it before.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, there was none.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Did you wrestle him? That thing
no,
was
I
weak.
Never have, but yeah. I mean, he laid those flippers.
Yeah, Mike Rotunda was
so
easy.
Then what'd you think? Your tooth is through yeah, your lip? What's yeah. going on?
I just pulled my lip out of my tooth and said, I got to do an hour. Jesus. I was more worried about having to slam him 35 times in an hour than I was about my tooth.
You and Terry Funk in the ring, you guys are almost identical in age, probably.
Okay,
right?
I'm 64. Terry, Harley just turned 71. So Terry is 70.
Okay, Terry's 70. Two cats in the ring, probably almost about the same time in the business. Who's calling that match?
50-50.
50-50.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Just chipping in here and there.
Yeah. But once again, chemistry.
Yeah, chemistry.
Terry and I, he's trying to get me to book a match with him now in a corral in Dallas and sell it like the thing him and Lawler did in the empty stadium.
Yeah.
He said, it'll sell like hell. I said, Terry, you're out of your mind.
What was interesting to me about Terry, because I was telling him that, yeah. didn't he start doing the
hardcore
moonsault off the top turnbuckle into the crowd?
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, what? You know, the pure wrestling background
yeah.
that he came from, what, second, third generation guy?
Yeah.
And then he started doing that towards the end
yeah.
when he was already beat up.
Yeah.
He got a couple more years, too.
Yeah.
He went to work for
ECW.
Yeah.
And he
terrorized. And then, of course, you know, went over to Japan with
yeah,
Mick
yeah,
and beat
yeah.
the living shit out of each other yeah. and so many barbed
yeah,
explosion
yeah.
matches.
Yeah.
So I think he's feeling a little rough now.
Yeah.
But I talked to him a few months ago.
And oh, Terry?
Yeah, he sounded great.
Yeah, but two knee replacements,
yeah.
hip replacement, and it took 12 inches of the intestine out
yeah.
last year. That, like that diverticulitis
yeah.
type thing? Yeah. Terry's been through hell.
Now, he retired several times and came back. Did you retire several times and come back? Or did you never really actually retired?
Well, I retired.
After the
Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame,
but
yeah.
then I let Hogan talk me into going to TNA.
Right.
Yeah, and I tried that for a while. But
well, let's talk about that. How was the dynamic of TNA after coming from, you know, WWE, which, you know, and like I told you last night in the green room, when I think Ric Flair, my picture in my mind is NWA in the
yeah,
Carolinas
yeah, yeah.
in that Crockett Promotions.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't want to define it
yeah,
purely as that,
yeah.
but I mean, that's what I think.
Yeah.
And that's what I think big time, great, real yeah. wrestling.
Yeah.
So what was the atmosphere in TNA?
Well, you just hit the nail on the head. After you've worked for Vince McMahon, it's
right.
totally different. But I will tell you this. I love the guys there. And I
oh, yeah,
time.
Absolutely.
I mean, they got some really good performers there.
Yeah.
And I was with Kurt, with Sting, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
I just mean
from an atmosphere standpoint, because
from business standpoint,
yeah, just because, you know, with there's been so many people who are having hands in booking this, but from a leadership perspective,
mm-hmm.
there's not really a wrestling brain there.
They had Bruce Prichard and just fired him. And
I don't understand that.
Yeah,
Bruce is a very smart cat,
a very smart guy, and he came from 20 years of being up here.
Yeah,
and you would think, but they beat to their own drum. I don't get it.
Who's booking that thing now?
I have no idea. I think Eric and Hulk.
Yeah.
You know.
How was Dixie to work with?
Dixie was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, how long can they keep that ship afloat?
I don't think much longer.
I mean,
they're making live TV now. Now, you know.
I know. I'm just saying. I mean, yeah. Yeah, it's an expensive bill.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Her father's tremendously wealthy, but at some point in time, you got to say, man.
A write-off becomes a loss.
Yeah, yeah.
But they do have some good young talent
over
there.
Oh, tremendous.
I've been pleasantly surprised with what Bully Ray has done.
Yeah.
To come from a very established tag team to turn into a singles run.
Yeah,
and he's taking the ball and running with it.
Yeah,
I got to say, I take my hat off to him.
Yeah, no, I like him too. He works his butt off. He and D'Lo have got that, not D'Lo, but what's Billy Ray's partner?
Bubba Ray.
Bubba Ray's partner. What's his name? From the old days.
Devon.
Yeah, Devon. Yeah, they got a wrestling school there. Yeah, they do that. Yeah, and they, but Bubba Ray is just, he's done tremendous. Yeah, God, he's just, and you know what? He caught his niche. Took him a while to figure it out as a singles wrestler, but
he did.
Of course, but here's the deal. Typical of TNA, and you probably don't even know this story, right? So he's getting ready to marry Brooke Hogan.
Yeah.
Did you see that, right?
Yeah, I saw it.
And then Brooke went and got engaged to one of the Dallas Cowboys.
Right. And, kayfabe, brother.
Kayfabe.
You got to protect the business. Protect the storyline.
I guess it went in next week and TNA is off.
Golly, man. I'm fixing to take a break. I'm coming back with Ric Flair. Out of all stuff, man, I can't talk to the guy forever, but I've got some more conversation with him. I cannot let this conversation go without talking about Sting.
Great.
I remember coming down to Sting, coming down to WCW, Center Stage TV. I was just to get a look or maybe have a tryout, and Sting was on fire. Yeah. You were there. It was Center Stage, great atmosphere, a little bitty building, and a classic opponent for you, and you really brought that guy from nowhere to superstar on your back. So we're going to talk about that when we come back. A few more questions and some other stuff, and some other pitfalls of the road. But, man, my brain's spinning. I'm not looking at anything. It's just a great conversation. Mo Darwich, stealth mode, recording, audio whoop-ass history with the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. You want to spend less time working on your lawn and more time sitting on your lawn with an ice cold one? Well, here you go. Scott's Turf Builder Triple Action kills weeds, prevents crabgrass, and feeds to build thick green lawns. With Scott's Turf Builder Triple Action, you can finally get the lawn you've always dreamt of. When you feed with Scott's Turf Builder Triple Action multiple times throughout the year, your grass will be greener, stronger, and more resilient. Scott's Turf Builder Triple Action will give your yard the nourishment it needs to help your weak, thin lawn recover. Also, Scott's No Quibble Money-Back Guarantee states, if you're not satisfied, you get your money back. Simple as that. Slam down a bag today. This is the Scott's Yard.
Welcome to the Steve Austin Show.
All right, coming back out of a break. Thanks to the sponsors. Get the damn show on here. I'm sitting here talking to the Nature Boy. Rick, can I get a woo?
Woo!
Finally.
Woo!
There we go. We took a little break. We started talking about everything else. Rick ordered up a couple of beers apiece, fixed a crack, opened a cold one, and we were talking about what we were talking about before we went to break. I wanted to talk about Sting. Because I remember I took a test visit down to Atlanta. I actually drove up. Talking about Matt Bourne earlier, I drove down to Atlanta with Matt Bourne from Dallas, Texas, and got a look at the Center Stage setup, watched Sting perform. You were there. It was absolutely insane. And, you know, this is right when, I guess, he had started working with you.
Yeah, and, he came from Louisiana.
Yeah,
he
came from Louisiana.
He broke in with Bill.
Broke in with Bill Watts.
Yeah.
And,
he broke in out here.
Out here.
Yeah, with, what's the guy's name?
With Jim Hellwig.
No, not Hellwig. No. The promoter out here.
The promoter out here.
Can't think of his name.
Well, I can't remember. But anyway, down there working with Blade Runner and Rock.
Yeah.
As, what was the name of that tag team? It escapes me. But anyway, they split up.
Yeah.
Sting comes to the Blade Runners. That's who they were.
Yeah, exactly.
My bad. I was a big fan. So anyway, Sting's there.
And Hellwig goes to New York.
Yeah. And I would watch... I'd watch Dingo Warrior, Jim, when he was in Dallas, World Class Championship Wrestling, while I was going to school there. And he would go on to become the Ultimate Warrior and have a great career. But there Sting was. And so there you are, the man. What did you think when you first met Sting? Because you're the guy that really put him on the map.
You know, Sting is one of those guys that, what can you say? Just the nicest kid in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and all he wanted to do was learn. And he had the greatest look. I mean, that look back then with the paint and the
long trunks
and the crew cut and all
a lot
the
of neon green
and all that stuff. Yeah, and I mean, he had a phenomenal physique. He looked like $1 million. And like Steamboat, I said, "Let me have this guy."
He had a lot of fire. He had a lot of charisma. And that Atlanta crowd, I mean, the local crowd really came to him. And then worldwide did as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he really found a home there and found a following.
Yeah. We did that 45-minute draw in Greensboro on the Clash of Champions. That got like an 8.5 rating. It was against WrestleMania.
Right.
Yeah.
When was it? I remember when he tore his patella tendon. And I was thinking, my God.
That was Corpus Christi.
Yeah.
Clash of Champions, same thing.
And he
went
down. I didn't think he was going to make it back.
Neither did I. I didn't. I'm the one that, what happened is climbing into the cage.
Yeah.
We were beating the crap out of, I can't remember who.
Someone.
It was a night that we said, hey, we only gave him 30 minutes, right, to become, it was a great segment, right?
Right.
And I can't remember what happened, but anyway, we started beating the hell out of somebody, and Steve came down to make the save to climb the cage, and I knocked him off the cage. He fell down and tore the patella tendon. I didn't know it. And then, worse than that, as I climbed out of the cage and through the door and ran and jumped on top of him on the ramp.
Yes.
And I had no idea that he was hurt. Oh, it felt terrible.
So he goes down. He comes back. And, of course,
he was out for a year.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, that's a serious deal. But he made the comeback. And but it was you that put him on the map.
Well, I think I had something to do with it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who else was he working major programs with?
Nobody.
I mean,
we were married for 3 years.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. You got to take a little responsibility here. Yeah.
No, but I mean, we.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. You got to get yourself over.
It was like working with Steamboat, though.
Exactly.
He wasn't a technician by any means that Steamboat was, because he hadn't had time to learn.
Yeah.
But he had a ton of fire, and he had $1 million look, and man, the people loved him.
And that's the thing. You don't have to be the greatest worker. And he's a very good worker, but you don't have to be the greatest worker in the world, a pure worker, to get over.
Yeah.
You need something. And so when you went to TNA all these years later, and, of course, he's running strong over there.
Yeah.
He looks as good as ever. He's cut some he's cutting the best promos of his life.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's on top over there.
Yeah.
And he just keeps on ticking. He's had a wonderful career. It amazes me that he's never gone to New York.
Well, you know, that's the thing, and he's the only guy I can't crack the drink. He just won't even have a drop.
You know, that's willpower.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, that's great. You just said something. Alcohol in the road, and pills. You said you never were a big pill guy.
Never in pills in my life. A lot of alcohol.
But you weren't a dope smoker either.
No, I never smoked dope.
Yeah,
in my life. No,
you damn sure weren't using needles.
No cocaine, nothing.
Okay, but you were just a drinker.
Just a drinker.
You know, that was my thing, man. Yeah. I love the whiskey, the vodka, the beer, and then I got a red wine kick. You know, if I had a bad injury, I'd take a pain pill here or there.
Yeah.
But I never got carried away like a lot of these guys do. And so many of the pitfalls that go with, I don't want to say specific to pro wrestling, but the entertainment industry in general, and certainly a business like professional wrestling, where you can be, you know, introduced to a lot of pain, but guys start taking those pills out of boredom just to get a buzz. And so many of our friends and brothers and sisters
are gone
because of that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, come on, dude. Why is that, Rick? Is it specific to pro wrestling? Are we wired a little bit different?
I use one word.
What?
Choice.
Choice.
No, nobody makes anybody do that. You know, but the thing of it is, the schedule with wrestling is a little bit different because we're out of the building at 11 o'clock at night, right? And then you're on a 7 o'clock flight in the morning, right? So me, I just went and got, I just went and drank, right?
Yeah.
But some guys are taking downers to go to sleep at night, and then they're taking uppers to get up in the morning, and they're eating pain pills.
Yeah.
You know, and then...
In the middle of the day.
Huh?
In the middle of the day.
Pain pills. That's terrible.
Yeah. It's just a vicious cycle, and I always got...
But I mean, I'm sure that goes on in other sports, too. I mean...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But, I mean, when you look at the death rate per our industry, guys are dropping like flies. I mean, you had the famous saying one time, and I think this will jar your memory. You were talking about piss on a bunch of rock and roll stars. They're not doing what we're doing.
Hell no.
You remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, what did I say? I can't remember.
About partying like a rock star.
Yeah.
You know, those guys couldn't hold shit to the lifestyle that we lead.
We would have put Keith Richards to bed.
But, you know, but with the physical toll
exacted
in the ring, the training, the gym work, and then the... Okay, got it. We got beers coming in. That's okay. We leave this in, Mo.
Yeah.
Mo, my main man, is going to get the beer that the Nature Boy just ordered. But
oh, I didn't order it. You ordered it.
I ordered the beer. I'll take the credit for that. But, yeah, it's like living a life of a pro athlete. And, hey, guys.
It's rough. I mean, if you think about it, and, I mean, I don't even care for the game myself. But 160 baseball games. Yeah. Are you kidding me? It's too long.
Yeah.
160 games they play.
Yeah.
I'm surprised more of those guys aren't down.
Well, I mean, you know, that's why a lot of them guys were doing uppers, and then, you know, they started popping them on the uppers, but it's like, dude, how do you stay up when you got to work a 162-game schedule?
Yeah, I mean, 160
games. And again, I'm not trying to put an indictment on baseball. They got enough problems with everybody.
No. I'm just saying that it's an unbelievable schedule. I mean, you know, the greatest thing that ever happened for me, and I'm a huge NBA star, was that we went on a strike and came back and only played half a season, so they had to play 4 games a week. Even 80 games is a long season.
Yeah. You know? We talked about kind of the high period of reversos. I'm drinking this. He's drinking that. Can you open mine there, Mo?
Yeah.
Hang on. All right, Rick, you got it.
It's working, man.
There you go. Cheers.
There we go. Cheers.
Just tipped a beer, swig a beer for the working man. Today the working man is Nature Boy Ric Flair. Hang on while I take a swig of my beer.
Man, that's cold.
We talked about the highest of highs, and you said that was running through a period of years with the Four Horsemen. And so now...
That was the funnest time.
The funnest. But yeah. Okay, but before I ask the next question, let me ask this question. You said you lost your confidence in
89. Uh-huh.
Do you want to talk about that? Because I can't remember why you lost your confidence.
I wrote about my book.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't read the book.
Oh, okay, that's right. I didn't either.
Yeah, we talked about this. But what happened in 89 that you lost your confidence?
What happened was that I was working for Herd, who I couldn't get along with at all. I mean, I tried everything to get along with
him. Why did you guys not see eye to eye?
Because the guy, his claim to fame, and he sold it to Jack Petrick, his claim to fame was that he was the channel manager at the old Chase where we did, you know, he was the channel manager.
Right.
He knew nothing about wrestling.
Right.
And he was running a Domino's company when they brought him in. He knew nothing about wrestling. I mean, hence the Dinglings.
Right.
And he wanted to cut my hair and call me Spartacus.
No, that's a shoot. I read that. That's a shoot. He wanted to give you a change of look.
I did cut my hair for him.
Yeah. I remember the haircut, but he wanted to call you Spartacus on top of that?
Wanted to call me Spartacus, yep.
That's got to be the dumbest shit I ever heard other than the ring master.
Well, Kevin Sullivan said, why don't you just change Mickey Mantle's name?
Yeah.
I swear to God. Yeah. Really started praying on me, right? Then he goes, one day he goes, you're 39 years old. We got to start moving ahead with the youth.
Boy, that's a slap in the face when you're 39.
39.
I wasn't
even 40
yet. That's prime.
I wasn't even 40 yet.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't even hit your prime.
He was trying to bury me, you know? Yeah.
But Jesus. So anyway, what happens? So he doesn't like you. You don't see eye to eye. You're 39 years old.
So what happened?
Now, as far now to my listeners in wrestling, 39, man, from a storytelling standpoint and a maturity standpoint, man, really, that's prime.
Yeah.
You know?
I thought so.
I do. If I'm wrong, and it ain't about athletic performance. If you're trying to be Ray Lewis on Baltimore Ravens defense, maybe not so much. But wrestling, that's prime.
Well, if it's 2013 and this happened in 87 was when he came in, 86. So how old was I then?
I mean, I ain't got to calculate.
Well, it doesn't matter. But
anyway, 39's prime, and you and Herd ain't seeing eye to eye, and you're losing your confidence. What happened?
Then he called me one day, and I didn't have a contract in place. So he said, I want you to show up to drop the belt. I said, I ain't signing. It's the first time I ever took a stand in my life.
Yeah.
I said, I ain't dropping nothing. Not till you give me my new contract. He kept lying to me, right? And so I went down to Daytona Beach, and he called me, and I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. They wanted me to drop it to Luger, right? And I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll drop it to Barry Windham, tell me where to be. And you know what he said to me? He said, you know, F you.
Yeah.
I'll bury you. And he sent Doug Dillinger,
right,
of all people, over to get the belt.
Right.
Doug just turned me to U-turn and left, right?
Right.
So I called Vince. I said, I'm coming. He said, quit bullshitting me. I said, no. I mailed him the belt, and Heenan walked around on TV. That was it.
But so what made you lose your confidence?
I mean, it built up to
all the mind games?
No, once I got out of there, I was fine. But, you know, just undermining me all the time, you know, telling me that, you know, getting old. Like, then I cut my hair, which I wanted to kill myself for.
Yeah, the haircut wasn't the greatest thing in the world.
Please.
From a visual standpoint. But so what did it do to your match quality? Were you still the same performer in the ring? Or
I think for a year, I was not the same in the ring. And I mean, because I had self-confidence issues. You know, I mean, here I'd been in this you know, been a Four Horsemen. I wrestled all these guys. I've been everywhere, you know, and then all of a sudden, I got a guy telling me that, you know, thing get out. I mean, my greatest saying is, hence the dinglings. Yeah. Dig a hole outside the ring and remember that gimmick? Good Lord, Jesus.
So you go into WWF,
mm-hmm.
and
I was right back on top, mentally.
Back on top.
Yep, mentally.
So, but we know that, man, the way I look back at wrestling, each territory has so much history, but that NWA history is just hard to top.
It is, and
I just remember so much more of your career there. But the way Vince McMahon does business, his attention to detail, it is the big leagues.
It is.
Make no mistake about it. And don't get me wrong, I'm from, you know, WWF.
Yeah.
And I left my body parts all over the damn world working with WWF. So I love the company, but I just have so many memories of you from NWA. So was the atmosphere different? Did you fit right in? Was it just another step down the road for Ric Flair?
Oh, it was great. I got here and it was, you know, I've been friends with DiBiase forever. DiBiase was here, and Hulk was just kind of teeter-tottering back around a little bit then. I think he was getting ready to make Thunder in Paradise. But I'm traveling on the road. I'm working with Henning, working with DiBiase. Terry Taylor was there. I mean, just a great chemistry. I mean, and I'm working with Savage, even though it was a tough time in his life because he was having hell with Liz back then, you know. But I mean, Randy was still Randy. Randy's a good guy. And, you know, I don't want to get involved in that part. But, of course, then they had me. No, I didn't want to get involved in his personal life. But then they had me make. We shot that angle where she was mine before she was mine before. That didn't help either.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was just going, okay, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, I mean, Bobby Heenan was there. I mean, I just loved it. And, you know, with, you know, DiBiase and I are to this day very close. I mean, it's that fun crew. Well, Barry Darso was there, Mike Rotundo.
A great crew.
Yeah.
But let me ask you something. While you're in the business, hot and heavy, Vince McMahon, you know, he bought the territory from his dad, WWF, but he's pushing through. It's a territory system.
Yes.
You know, everybody kind of stays in their playground, so to speak. Then Vince McMahon starts using TV. He starts going nationwide, infiltrating other other people's territories.
Mm-hmm.
You're watching all this go down. You're seeing some of the territories start disappear.
They all did.
He's absorbing them.
Yeah.
So what's going through your mind as you're watching this process unfold?
Well, actually, for a while, we gave you guys, not you, because you were with us then, we gave you guys a run. Crockett, to this day, I'm going to tell you, if Crockett had stayed east of the Mississippi River and never tried to do California and all that, because our TV, number one, the Super Channel wasn't. I mean, now the
Superstation,
the audience or the number of people, the viewers wasn't in California. We're like we go to Ohio and up to Philadelphia and the little building. You guys would be. They'd be in the Spectrum. We'd be in the Civic Center, 10,000 strong. I mean, it was me, Arn, Ole. I mean, whatever against the Road Warriors, Sting, Nikita. I mean. We had a hot ticket, but they got this bug that they wanted to go compete out in the West Coast, and we got killed.
But what do you think now? Because, I mean, you were there when all the territories were there, and they all start drying up, and you look at today's landscape, it's hard for, you know, there's not local wrestling. I mean, there's the facility down in Orlando, but... I'm beating a dead horse here. I miss the days of all the territories where guys could learn how to work. And when you went to New York, you'd already paid 8 to 10 years worth of dues to get that break because you were in a territory system. And they don't exist anymore.
Almost 20.
Yeah.
Because I started in 72.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, once I got there, I said, why? Because I had a chance to go in the 80s, you know.
Yeah.
Vince wanted me to wrestle Savage at SummerSlam back in 1986, but I was so NWA, I just couldn't see myself leaving, and I felt like I was being disloyal, you know what I mean? So I ended up staying, you know, and if I look back on it now, I don't regret that, but I can only imagine the run I would have had if I came in 85 or 86, you know what I mean?
I remember as a mark, as a fan, back in the day, you know, I would look at the Pro Wrestling Illustrated, the top 10, and... You know, you could look at all the federations, who the world champions were, but that NWA champion was kind of the real deal champion.
Yeah, I just saw, what's his name?
George Napolitano.
Not Napolitano. Bill Apter. I said, listen, what I can't stand is, number one, you have me most hated, number two, put Piper ahead of me, right?
Yeah.
And then number three, you had Hogan number one as the world champion. I said, how'd that work? I rib him all the time. Because every week it changed.
Yeah, but
most,
you know,
popular.
But that's, that speaks to the weight that Pro Wrestling Illustrated carried with the boys. Because that was kind of like the Bible.
Yeah.
It was almost a shoot. And so everybody.
Well, I never looked at it, but people would bring and show me. Hogan's better than you.
So what happened? You know, you started off with Vernie, broke in, you went down NWA, WWF, TNA, back and forth, every place. But what did you think when Vern went out of business?
Oh, well, the reason Vern went out of business was he wouldn't change with the time.
I mean, he had a hell of a roster.
He had a hell of a
Vern
roster.
Started cherry picking that roster.
And then, but he just wouldn't, you know. Vern got inducted in the Hall of Fame. You know that, right?
Yes.
About 3 years ago, 4 years ago, actually before me. So it's been like 7 years ago. But Vern had his own way of doing business, and he wasn't going to take it.
Yeah.
But that was, you know, he could have made a fortune. You know, Vince offered him a lot of money.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what the number was, but I'm sure it was considerable, right? I mean, if you think about this, I mean, this is a mind-boggling number, and I'm pretty close within a million or two, right? Vince bought WCW for $5 or $6 million just to buy the library. Christ, the library. If I'd known you could do that, he paid $5 or $6 million for the whole company.
Right.
And he bought that library, which is priceless. Hell, I would have found someone to buy the library.
I think that just speaks volumes of how smart and how far ahead Vince McMahon
was. Oh my God!
From anybody else,
he bought WCW for it's between $4 and $7 million.
It's a funny story because I was there. You know,
anybody bought the library?
Yeah, well, I was there, and he always tells me the story because him and Ted Turner were friends, and he always.
Oh no, they weren't.
No, well, I mean, they were acquaintances. He told me the story. He got a phone call from Ted. He goes, Vince, Ted Turner.
Yeah.
I just want to call and let you know I'm in the wrestling business now.
Yeah.
And Vince's answer to him was, well, that's great, Ted. I'm in the entertainment business.
Yeah.
That was the difference between Vince and Ted.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, the Monday Night Wars ensued.
Yeah.
And they kicked our ass for 2 years. And, you know, finally we caught stroke. And
Steve Austin showed up. But, I mean, that's what killed me. All those guys that made all that money, right, with Vince, deserted.
Yeah.
Just, and they ran down to WCW.
It was about the less days and guaranteed money, you know?
No, I get it. It was guaranteed money, but how about some loyalty?
Man, I know it's a slippery slope.
I mean,
that was the time, that changed.
And then they would go out on TV and say, we're going to kick Vince's ass. They'd talk about it on TV. I mean, what?
Competition makes you do crazy stuff.
No, I know, but there was no reason for that. Let's just coexist and do your thing. I mean, let me tell you about Vince with me. He has me up in Stanford, right, doing a commercial, right? He's got a picture of Jane Fonda that says, I love you, Nature Boy, on the mantle when they're filming me with, like, Jane Fonda, you know.
Yeah.
He took the shot. He ain't afraid to. I go, I don't want Ted mad at me. Me and Ted are buddies. But you know him. Go, Jane Fonda, I love you, Nature Boy.
Yeah.
Woo. Good Lord.
Hey, what's some of the craziest stuff you've seen being on the road? Well, it was in a ring, a rib.
Well, first of all, I'm not a river.
Me neither.
I don't like ribbing.
I didn't rib people either.
Yeah, I never ribbed nobody.
And,
I mean,
and people didn't really rib me either because they got that.
I ribbed a few of my wives, but that's about all.
Okay, let's switch the subject. Piss on a rib. Let's talk about staying married on the road.
It's different.
What happened?
What happened with staying married on the road?
I haven't been able to do it.
Everything is great until they can't go with you.
Right.
It's like I've had two that, just the last two that... I made him, you take him to Europe, and which is Europe is fun.
Yes.
Okay, you take him to Europe, and we ride in the buses and drink the beer and sing, and you know how much fun it was back then, right? I mean, God, good Lord. We couldn't wait to get to Europe. It was more fun than the States, right? We're like gods over there. And but, man, the minute you got to leave them home, then they think you're having the same time, you know, in the States, and you're not, because you're at Raw, you're there at 12. If you're on top, you're out of there at 12. I mean, that's it.
And it's work.
It's work.
And you see the glamour on TV, but the work, the grind, the BS.
Rehearse, rehearse, rehearse.
Yeah.
I mean, walk through. I mean, it's a long-ass day. You need to have a beer.
Yeah.
The greatest story I ever tell, and I told them at WrestleMania, and I like telling a story.
You got it.
Is I was married to Tiffany, right?
Yeah.
And she, I took her everywhere. Australia, Japan. She saw it all, right? And traveled on the bus with Cena. I mean, we had a ball, right? She's the only woman that ever got me to call from the hotel room. I don't know why I fell for it. Did the, you know, once again, not thinking straight, right? You know, I've done it. It's happened a few times, right?
Yeah.
So I'm in Indianapolis, and I'm downstairs at the bar with Mike Adamly and Cena, right? You know, it's like midnight, and I said, I'm going to have a few beers with Cena. She said, what? Are you ever going to grow up? I said, I don't know. What do you mean, when am I ever going to grow up? What are you talking about? When are you going to grow up and realize you need to just go to bed at night and not go out? Now, if she was with me, are you kidding? All night long, right? And I said to her, I'm sorry. I just, you know, I think I've worked hard today. I deserve to have a couple beers. She said, well, what? She said, let me ask you something else. This was the home run. She goes,
okay,
I got it. She goes, what do you have in common with someone 30 years younger than you? Talking about Cena. I said, what did you just say to me?
Oh,
and she said, I said, what do you have in common with someone 30 years younger than you? I said, you know what? I'll let you know tomorrow. Boom, and powered down the cell phone and came home at 4 o'clock in the morning. But when I got home, she'd moved out. Are you kidding me? Playing the game. Like, we move out on me. You know what I did?
Yeah.
I came home and she just moved enough stuff out to try to scare me, right?
Yeah,
I'll tell you, it was Father's Day that I got home, right? Because I was on the road that week.
Timing.
And I got 2 men in a truck, which wasn't even open on Father's Day. I took everything of hers I had in the house. Everything, packed it up and took it over and dumped it in our girlfriend's front yard. I never talked to her again. And then, of course, then 6 months later, she took $40,000 out of the bank account when she left. Right, 6 months later, she didn't got any money.
Yeah.
So she sues me, and I had to give her another $140,000. It didn't make any sense. I didn't do anything. It was called a no fault divorce. Does that make sense? No, I mean, nobody cheating on anybody.
Yeah.
Just everybody thinking I'm a multimillionaire.
Hey, you know, when you were growing up as a kid in Minnesota. Probably humble beginnings, right?
Yeah, I'm very humble. My mom and dad were very conservative.
Same with me.
Yeah.
And you think as a kid, you know what? Every now and then you're hearing a conversation, someone says, yeah, well, I talked to my lawyer the other day. And as a kid, you're thinking, well, why are you talking to a lawyer? Why would you need a lawyer?
Yeah.
Growing up as a kid,
middle-class
family in South Texas, I think, man, that's great. I'll never need a lawyer because I don't understand why you would.
Yeah.
These days, I know you've had your share of lawyers. I've had a gut full of my lawyers.
Are you kidding me?
I'm sick of lawyers.
It cost me $540,000 in attorney fees to get divorced from Beth. $540,000 in 2 years.
Man, I'd have done it for $450,000.
I know.
What happened? Why does so much cost you so much?
Because it just dragged on and dragged on and dragged on, and the guy's $1,000 an hour. I had the best one in town. God forbid me hire somebody else, right? And I was paying him $17,000 a month. And at that time, which is a story that I'm very proud of, he doesn't like me telling it, Vince lent me $800,000 to get through that time, right?
Yeah.
And, of course, the one thing I did, I can see that I attribute a pat on my back, here's Vince, right? He said, you know, if you want to declare bankruptcy, so you don't have to pay him back, I paid him back every dime. It took me 3 years.
You're cool telling the story on air, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But he doesn't like to be acknowledged as a person that did that, but it's the truth. He lent me $800,000, and he called me and said, hey, if you want to declare bankruptcy, not at one time over the course of a year. And I said, no, I'll never do that. And I didn't. I paid him back every dime.
Hard time.
My whole WrestleMania check was Shawn Michaels. Gone. The biggest check I ever got in my life. I never even saw it in my hand.
It ain't what you make, it's what you say.
Yeah.
The old thing that all the promoters used to tell the guys when they come into a territory, I'm drinking beer, finally, with the Nature Boy Ric Flair, mode, Darwich, stealth mode, dialing down the controls. Oh,
everybody blaming their marriage on me.
That's how we're going to blame marriages on Ric Flair when we come back from a word from our sponsors who keep this show on the air for free.
Oh, the world champion says we got to go out tonight. Okay, all right. God, every wife in the country hated me.
Welcome to the Steve Austin Show.
I'm coming back. I'm talking to Nature Boy Ric Flair, looking at a guy man to man, face to face, in a hotel room, Los Angeles, California, at SummerSlam as we speak.
Looking as only we can look.
Yeah, man, I thought I'm about to call a high spot with Rick. One of us is going through the window before this thing's over with. Nobody's bleeding yet. We're on our second beer. We're having a good time. Mode Darwish stealth mode. We're catching all this audio whoop ass, recording it for posterity and history. Rick, I got to ask you, you know, I consider you the greatest of all time. Your favorite is Ray Stevens. Who else do you hold in high regard? I have a list here on my computer. Let me just run through a couple of names. Okay. And I'll just, you drop me a little 411. We'll keep a long story short on these cats. And we're not running anybody down. Just your opinion. Mm-hmm. Luthes.
Well, you know something? I never saw Lou wrestle.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Moving on.
But Lou was known as being a very tough guy.
A very tough guy and certainly an important historical figure.
And I know Lou personally.
Right.
It's like the greatest story of all time. He walks in the locker room in Norfolk, right? And he's walking around shaking hands with everybody, right? Because he lived in Norfolk, Virginia, right?
Yeah.
And Luger walked over and said, "Who's Lou Thesz?" I went... I swear, that's one of the greatest stories of all time. He goes, "Who is that guy?" I said, "It's Lou Thesz." He says, "Who's that?" I said, "Okay, never mind. We'll just move on."
Oh, Rick just hit himself in the forehead when he said that. You got to see the visual. I wish we were running video. That was great.
Are you kidding me? I don't know. You might want to Google him.
It almost reminds me of the story. Every time we used to go to Kansas City, Harley lived in Kansas City and had the basement with the pool table. Yeah. So all the guys would go over to Harley's place after the show. We'd play pool all night long and drink beer.
Yeah.
And Billy Gunn was down there, my old travel partner, and he beat Harley Race on his own pool table like three times in a row.
Billy Gunn
like,
did?
Yes. I give him the elbow, like, "Come on, kid, I got them. You're beating the 8-time world champ like a drum in his own house."
This was with WWE or over there?
No, it was WCW. No,
I was there too,
he's beating like a drum in his own crib. I'm like, "Come on, dude, it's 8-time world champ. Let him win one."
Jeez.
Okay, well, you're number two on the list. Okay, I'll say the greatest of all time. Okay, let's, there's Hogan, Bruno Sammartino.
Well, I've just made peace with him because...
Were you guys at odds?
No, I wrote in my book that, Bruno and, man, he and I are friends now. We made peace at WrestleMania. Because I was never mad at him, but I did say that, you know, he was in a 5-state area.
Right.
That was it, right?
I got you.
Because when I was NWA champion, he came to St. Louis one time, and nobody knew who he was.
Right.
And he was a good performer, you know, but he didn't have to perform because he just, you know, crushed guys. You know what I mean? But he had real good matches in that. But you know, I have nothing but respect for him. But when people ask me my opinion of Dory Funk Jr., who was a world champion, or Bruno Sammartino at the same time, I got to go with Dory. You know, I mean, just that's what it is. I mean, I don't mean it bad.
What about Frank Gotch? You ever catch any Frank
Gotch? Oh, I met Frank, but I never saw him wrestle, no.
Really?
No, I met him in Tampa, though.
He's supposed to be a tough guy.
Real tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, real tough.
Well, let me put Billy Robinson's name on this list. One of the guys that trained you.
Yeah,
you get a
real
chance
tough,
to work with him?
Real tough and a real good performer, both.
Yeah. Yep. Did you get a chance to work with him?
Billy had in Chicago one time.
Well, check it out. I kind of heard that every now and then he'd take a couple of liberties with some guys. No?
Never.
No?
Never with me. He treated me great. Billy and I haven't seen him in years, but I got along great with Billy.
Let's talk about this guy, Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels, I call him the greatest in-ring performer I've ever seen. You're my favorite wrestler, and you're Shawn Michaels' favorite wrestler. Triple H is, I consider him the best performer on a night-in, night-out basis I've ever seen. What he can do athletically, the stories he can tell, the execution, never botching anything. Your thoughts on Shawn?
I just follow your track, man.
Right.
The best. The only guy that I ever put in the same class, but I'm not saying he couldn't do it, he didn't have to, but the only guy that I've ever compared to Shawn who I've worked with a lot was Steamboat.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But right. but Steamboat didn't do the flips off the top rope, and I mean, Sean has just done some, you know, stuff I could never do.
Yeah, and when I tell people, I mean, I had such great chemistry with The Rock and Bret Hart.
Yeah.
But when I talk about me working with a pure babyface,
yeah.
I loved working with Ricky Steamboat because he was a guy that, you know, every now and then he would chip something in. I'm calling 90% of that match,
yeah.
and he's filling in all the gaps.
Yeah.
And that's what I loved about Ricky
yeah.
Steamboat. You know, you grab that headlock.
Yeah.
You ain't got to tell him top wrist. He's going to do that's his end.
Yeah.
He's going to start coming into that top wrist lock and fighting out of it.
Same with Sean.
Yeah.
And Sean had that ability. When he sells, you believe it.
Yeah.
He and Steamboat are in a class by themselves, and I'll stand on the ground about that.
Talk to me about Nick Bockwinkel.
I wrestled Nick when I was NWA champion. He was the NWA champion a couple times. I thought Nick was real good, you know, but my problem was I couldn't get over Ray Stevens at that point in time. I mean, Nick was real good. And by the way, Nick's in bad health right now.
Is he?
Or not. Yeah.
No, what's going on with
Alzheimer's.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, real bad. So he might not be with us long. But I love Nick Bockwinkel. We're very close friends. He taught me a lot.
A lot in what regard?
About the business.
Right.
We talked all the time. You know,
yeah.
His greatest line ever was, Nick could interview good, right? He goes,
that's why I love to say
yeah, he goes, for all you 8-to-5 humanoid lifers. Humanoid lifers.
That's tremendous.
That was the greatest line in the world. He'd be talking, and he never he wasn't like me. He didn't get crazy and raise his voice. Just, you know, he always dressed sharp, you know, the scarf, the pocket scarf, and he goes, for all you 8-to-5 human lifers that can't comprehend who I am, I used to die. Are you kidding me?
Hey, what are your thoughts? I never saw you work with Andre the Giant, did you?
Oh, many times.
Yeah.
God, are you kidding me?
How was it? Great.
Well, it wasn't believable, but I did. Christ, he had me take him over in a headlock in Orlando with it. I said, are you kidding me?
What year was this?
When I was NWA champion, I wrestled, well, number one, I wrestled against him in tag matches forever. I was his chauffeur. We started the same year in Minneapolis.
Are you kidding
John
me?
John Ferrer, I couldn't wait. Vern says, take this kid around with you, right? I said, hell yeah. I took him to every bar in Chicago. We'd walk around. He couldn't speak a word of English, you know.
Yeah.
That's his real name, John Ferrer. He wasn't Andre the Giant then.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Did I have fun with him? I took him one night in Charlotte. I took him out. He drank 106 beers in 5 hours. I tell the story to everybody.
Shoot.
5 hours, 106 beers. And Frank Valois, his manager, right? Frank drank 55.
That's a hell of a damn number for a normal human being.
At the Coliseum Motor Inn in Charlotte in the 70s. Are you kidding me? Oh, God. Angelo Mosca looked at me and said, you keep hanging around him, you'll be overstaying the welcome because it'll be 30. Boss.
Wait, what about, okay, manage. Randy Savage.
I like Randy a lot.
Yeah.
And I thought Randy was a real good performer. You know, Randy's only issue with Randy is just he lived in a world of paranoia. And I felt bad for him.
Yeah.
A very paranoid guy. Even to the end, you know. And then he finally found happiness and got in a good place. And, you know, here he dies having a heart attack. People want to know why I have a drink every day.
Yeah.
Here he is, Randy, all the money in the world. You know, he never spent a dime, right?
Yeah, I heard
he never. He'd be very frugal, but that's okay. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, yeah.
But he finally found happiness.
Yeah.
Got remarried for a year because he never got over Liz forever, right?
Really?
And then he dies driving across the bridge in Tampa.
Man, I tell you what, it was a heartbreaker for me. I just
Held
that guy.
Cool. I love Randy.
I worked with him in Orlando.
Yeah.
I did a job for him, and it's back when did you have the book back in? They booked a match for it with me in Orlando.
No, 2004 was the book.
Okay, yeah, they didn't really have any plans for me. Didn't worked with him one time. Would have loved to work a mainstream program with him.
Oh, but Randy could work.
But he's a working bastard.
Yeah.
Very intense. Love the persona.
Yeah.
Love the promos.
Yeah.
Love the execution.
Yeah, dig it.
But that dude, he was just a very intense human being.
Yeah.
Let's talk about
don't you hear something? Angelo Poffa, you know that, right?
Yeah, his dad.
His dad, right? When I was traveling in the 74 and that, when I had no money,
yeah.
I was asleep in the car with Angelo.
Yeah, he was saving money.
I broke Randy and then Lanny in.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, here's a guy you know and love pretty well, Roddy Piper.
Oh, you guys
just did the wife swap thing a while back.
Yeah.
And he said he had a blast.
I can't say enough about him.
I love that guy's promos. I loved what he did in the ring. He wasn't the most athletic guy in the world, but I love the... You don't have to be athletic. I'm just saying what he did...
He's another guy that never fell down. What are you talking about?
Well, you know what I'm saying, but he was great psychology,
great promos. Yeah, great.
You either loved him or you hated him. But whatever he wanted you to do, you did.
You know what I wrote in my book? And it's to the truth. And this is nothing against anybody. But Vince was afraid to do it, clearly. But if they'd made Piper the world champion, you know, see, back then it was him and Hogan and the four or five guys that just always battled. So much in turmoil inside, right, and all that. But I wrote in my book, if they'd ever made Roddy Piper the world champion when he was hot, I mean, they were selling out anyway, but Piper should have had a run. He never got it.
Right.
You know, it's funny, him and Hogan wrestle each other, and nobody went down. But not the best viewing.
I love
me some Hot Rod, man. Hey, let me tell you, I wish we could talk forever. I can tell you some Roddy Piper stories you would not. Me and him been like this in 78, right?
Right.
Good Lord.
You got a good story for me?
The best one is, so I go to Santo Domingo for Cologne.
And you can talk about this on the show, right?
Huh?
You can talk about it on the show, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
We're all clear.
Yeah.
So what happens is Roddy's doing commentary. He left and then they went and Barnett hired him, right? So... Roddy is so witty. They tried him in color commentary in Florida, and of course he killed somebody right there because he's so witty, right? So then Barnett put him up there with Gordon Solie, and Bob Armstrong had just won whatever title he had in Georgia, right?
Yeah.
And Piper said on air, he goes, "Dude, I'm happy for Bob, but those legs belong on a racehorse." Not on a man, right? About to pick up a body, no leg, right? Fired. So he called me and said, "I ain't got a job." So I took him to Puerto Rico with me, right? But what a ball of Piper down there.
Yeah.
So we go to Santo Domingo. He didn't go on this trip. I go to Santo Domingo, right? And I'm wrestling this guy named Jack Veneno. And it's a military state to this day, right?
Yeah.
And the president's son is sitting in the front row, right? And Veneno's 5'6 and weighs 106 pounds, but he got the sleeper on me. And they go, 1,001, 1,002, with my hand, right, boom, ring the bell. Right, it's over. Right. Whoa, not to them it wasn't, man. Referee gave me the belt, I gave it back to him. He said, "Get it back." I said, "Keep it."
Yeah.
You know, I left it there.
Yeah.
So now Cologne calls me and says, "They want you back, and they're going to pay you $10,000. So I go, "Shit, $10,000. Okay, I'll go back. But I need to bring Piper with me, so I bring Piper with me." Off he got.
Why did you bring Piper with you?
Because I wanted somebody to make sure I got out of there again.
Yeah.
Okay? Nobody gets it. The first time I flew without a passport, and then they left me.
Yeah.
So anyway, Piper, of course, you know Roddy, right?
Yeah.
He's got the American flag with him. We come marching out the door. I'm waving the American flag.
Yeah.
And then the finish was where Piper trips this guy. And I cover him. Holy shit.
Hot?
Are you kidding me? They tore down the building. Me and Piper didn't get out of the building until 2 o'clock in the morning.
What were y'all doing? Rat holed away?
We couldn't get out. They had a riot. Are you kidding? Jesus. Don't even get me going.
What was your favorite building to work? Building specifically.
Favorite building to work of my whole career?
Yeah.
Greensboro.
And then that was that's the same old building. WCW
killed it.
Yeah. Did they?
Yeah. We were sold out. It's kind of like this. You know, we went to Winston-Salem. I'm not sure. I think, Steve, you were up north. And the Bay Faces always won the war games.
Yeah.
So they said, no, we'll swerve. We sold out Winston-Salem. And they had the war games. The bad guys went over, right?
Yeah.
They killed the town.
Right.
Yeah, killed the town.
That place used to have a great atmosphere to it. And it was a great wrestling town, Greensboro.
Oh, Greensboro was it? Yeah. Are you kidding me, man? Hey, let me tell you a funny thing. You'll love this story. You like stories, right?
Yeah.
So Johnny was paralyzed, right?
Yeah,
so they vacated the U.S. title.
Yes.
And out of respect for Johnny Valentine, who he was, everybody came. Harley, Dory, Terry. I mean, they had everybody there, right, for the U.S. title. Sold out.
Yeah.
Take Johnny out in a wheelchair, da-da-da-da. But it was phenomenal, right?
Mm.
We go back at Holiday Inn, and there's a bunch of marks in the parking lot like the old days. It was heat back then, right?
Yeah.
And two guys jumped on fucking Paul Jones and beat the shit out of him.
Really?
Do you remember Paul Jones?
Yeah.
Paul's a great guy. Yeah. He's not a tough guy. Two guys beat him up. So then the two guys, they had rented a huge banquet room for the Crockett had for the party, right? And there was about 40 guys, 40 Varnsgaard guys in the room. And they had Klondike Bill walk out and invite these two guys into the party. Like, come on, join us, right?
Oh, no.
Holy shit. Those two, they I'm talking about Murdoch, I mean, Harley. Man, they kicked it. Both the Briscoes were there. I mean, yeah. It was unreal. Those two guys are still, they may still be in the hospital.
They got their ass handed
Oh,
them.
Who you think? I just couldn't get part of it. I just sat back and looked and went, right. Wahoo, my God. You know, nobody God, beats no one beats up one of our guys.
There was such a strong crew of workers, characters, personas, whatever you want to call it. One of the guys that really lit up there for a while and was really on fire and had a head of steam until a car accident sidelined him was Magnum T.A.
I know. It's terrible. You know what happened to him?
He was on the road to being a superstar.
He was on the way to being a world champion.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
how did you get along with him?
Well, very well, close. Yeah, another kid that grew up on me, right? And Magnum was a great kid, but what happened was I was in Birmingham, Alabama, wrestling Bob Armstrong for the world title, right? Mm-hmm. But it was a draw, right? But in Ron Fuller rules, it was only a half-hour match. I never did a half-hour draw as a world champion, except when I was working for Fuller, right?
Yeah.
So they call me and say Magnum was in a terrible accident, right?
Yeah.
And I go, fuck it. So I fly in the morning, of course, and he's in the hospital. I drive down to the hospital, and at that time, Terry couldn't move, nothing, for a month. And he was in one of those old iron lung type deals. He wasn't on life support. And the only way he could communicate was to touch his tongue through this metal thing, right?
Yeah.
And he told me later on, he used to lay there all night long. They wouldn't come and take care of him. I mean, he went through hell. And to this day, I just saw him at my son's funeral. I see him periodically in Charlotte.
Yeah.
You know, he's happy now. He's got kids and all that.
Yeah.
But he still is like this. I mean, it's terrible. And what he was doing, we all flew back on a jet that night, and we were all drinking like hell, right? And Terry's one of those guys that had a Porsche and liked to fly, right? Didn't have a seatbelt on. He rounded the corner on Providence Road, or on Sardis Road North, not in Charlotte, where I live, right? And man, his car flew and hit a tree. You should have seen the car. I don't know how he lived through it. You know, Porsche is nothing, right? The engine's in the back, you know, the whole front. I mean, he hit that tree, and they're all trying to say he was going, 35 miles an hour. You know, Magnum, right?
Yeah.
Probably going 70 miles an hour. But then a double knockout. Both his wife and his girlfriend show up at the hospital.
Oh no!
Yeah,
and on top of that, he's
yeah. He was married. He was married to I can't remember her name now. Oh my God! Yeah. So then I was trying to help him out of that deal. He couldn't talk. I said, "Man, I'm trying to bail you out of this, brother." But I'm whispering to him, "You've left a lot on my plate here, man." Good Lord,
man, that's unbelievable.
Oh God,
he was just such.
Yeah, Tamara was his first wife, right?
Yeah, but such a good-looking guy.
Oh God, I mean, he had that body, he had everything, and he could work.
Hey, tell me about we got to talk about Ivan Koloff and Nikita Koloff.
Oh, I'm going to see Ivan next weekend.
Oh, man. Yeah. You're going to see Ivan?
Next weekend.
I've never met him. Please tell him
God,
I said hello.
Are you kidding?
Man, I got so much respect for that guy.
It's his birthday, the 24th. I'll be with him. We're doing a big signing up in Richmond. I'm with Pete Rose and Reggie Jackson and all those guys.
Well, tell him I said hi.
Same company that I want you to work for, MAB.
Hey, so you still keep in contact with Nikita as well?
No, I never see Nikita.
Okay.
He's another
guy. But you guys had fun, though, working back in the day.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
The nightmare.
The Russians had the Russian nightmare.
The Russians
were over like Rover, man.
Yeah, one night we're wrestling in Philadelphia. We're doing a double shot, Philadelphia and Baltimore, right? And the plane was late. And they go to me, right? Can you go an hour with him? I said, go an hour with him? He's got two moves.
Yeah.
the sickle.
It was so funny.
No, he's a great guy. But,
yeah. But you know, Jatuta Nikita Koloff.
Yeah.
Arn Anderson used to have the greatest Nikita Koloff impersonation of all time.
No, but you know, I'll tell you something about Nikita. You know why his gimmick got over so big? He never talked.
You're right.
Come to the gym every day and work out. He'd never talk. Yeah. Like he didn't understand English.
Yeah.
And people bought it.
Yeah. I traveled with him for a little while. I traveled with him for a while. He was a frugal cat. It was me and him and Black Bart. And
He saved. You know what he did one day? They called him and they said he hadn't cashed a check in a year.
He what?
He hadn't cashed a check in a year.
What was he doing? Rat holing him?
No, just rat holing him.
I did that one time. Thinking I would have got to pay taxes on him. I was like, what the fuck?
No. It wasn't avoiding that. He was just saving his money.
That's how he saved it?
Yeah, he didn't cash a check. You know, he's a green kid from Minneapolis, Eddie Sharkey School.
Yeah.
What do you know? Eddie didn't teach him nothing. You know, I love Eddie, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's like the Road Warriors. They came to town one day, and I saw them, and the guy goes to me, these are the Road Warriors. And I go, okay, Hawk and Mike. And, of course, I really became close friends with them.
Right.
But, I mean, Rude came out of that school, yes. Eddie Sharkey School and all that, right? But Eddie didn't teach him anything about, you know, etiquette and money. And well, who taught anybody back then? I mean, give me a break.
Hey, well, what do you think when the Road Warriors roll onto the scene? Because they came out of AWA.
Yep.
And went down to NWA. And, man, I tell you what, they, you know.
They were on fire. Oh, there's another great tag team.
Holy shit.
We left them off the list.
Yeah, and I always put them on my list. I'm glad we got to them.
Well.
Tell them, big man.
Yeah, what an interview. Well.
But those guys with the no-sell stuff, the power stuff, the looks, the promos, the spikes, the makeup, the personas. Yeah. It was just, man, they were money.
Yeah, the thing, you know, we cut them off. We just go out there and take press slams for about an hour or a half, what I'm being hypothetical, 15 minutes. And what they would do is they'd sell Iron's DDT because it was so good.
Right.
We'd cut one of them off with the DDT, and they sold great and everything. But, brother, let me tell you something. Being in the War Games with Mike Hagstrand, the last one coming in, ain't any fun at all, brother. Mike was out there. Of course, we're spitting on him. You know, Mike was the last one in. When Mike came in, when he broke JJ's collarbone, they lifted JJ up of all the people, animal on his shoulders, and Mike dove off the top rope with that clothesline, broke JJ's collarbone. We're all got the hell beat out of us. I go, Dusty, can we let you or somebody else come in second and last, not Mike? Good Lord.
He came in a little amped up.
Oh, my God.
And he had those traps that were about a foot tall.
Yeah.
And, man, coming down the ramp, it was just intimidation. I was in awe when those guys. And, of course,
it was a phenomenal
this
gimmick.
Was the heyday. Yeah. This was when wrestling was
real. In the 80s, man. Yeah. It was real in the War Games, let me tell you. We did 47 War Games in a row. It's called the Great American Bash.
Yeah.
47 in a row. You walk in the locker room and there's a list checked by who's going to do this, right? Are you kidding me? I dig myself 47 times. I said, why am I never off the list?
I remember being in USWA for a long time. I was traveling with Tom Pritchard, and he was kind of lead heel. And, man, he had an open wound on his head. Tom, you could basically just thump him. And, you know, the stomach stopped bleeding.
Yeah. Oh, Tom's a great guy.
Tom, he gave me a lot of great advice traveling down the road with him. Interesting character.
I got. Did he ever tell you the time I made him do 500 free squats at the pool in Birmingham?
No, but this would be a great story for me to end the show on. Yeah. Tell me.
Well, I was working for Fuller, you know, and Birmingham was one of their towns, right? And we spent the night. I refused to drive back after 300 miles from Pensacola, where the office was, right? So I got Tom to spend the night in Birmingham and then got up the next morning and said, what are you going to do for work? I said, 500 free squats, 200 push-ups. You know, which I did every day, right?
Yeah.
Religiously, right? He couldn't walk for a week. He said, I hate you, you son of a bitch. I said, hey, it's how you get in condition, man. No, he's a great guy. Good Lord. And Brother Bruce, great guy too, God.
Oh, yeah, I've been trying to get Bruce on the show. I loved him when he was doing Brother Love.
Oh, my God,
I
love
the televangelism thing. Yeah. So when he started doing that, I mean, I was like, I bought into that hook, line, and sinker.
Plus, Bruce's, you know, Bruce's wife had serious cancer. You know that, right? Yeah. And Bruce got cancer.
Yeah.
Did you know that, too?
No.
Yeah, Bruce got it, too. He's in remission. I mean, he's been through a lot, man.
Oh. Hey, how many blade jobs you figure you've done?
Oh, I don't know. Let me see. 40 years. 35 years every night? I don't know. You tell me.
You know what? What is so funny? And maybe, I don't know, twisted. Yeah. I don't want to say sick.
When I broke into business, you know what they said? red is green.
Red is green.
No problem, buddy.
I used to
show me how to put it on here.
I used to travel down the road, and for a while I was working a lot with Dustin Rhodes down
there. Dustin, yeah, Nugget. Dustin, yeah.
And man, we'd have some very snug matches, and I love working with
Dustin. Can really work.
Yes, he can.
And so, and so we were very good friends. So can Cody.
Yeah. So anyway, I remember we rolled into Phoenix, Arizona one time, and Grizz was was the agent running the show. And me and Dustin like get a little color when we work with each other. So Dustin went up to Grizz and said, "Hey, Grizz, you think me and Steve might be able to go out there and get a little bit of color?"
Yeah.
And Grizz says, looked out between the curtains. There wasn't nobody there.
Yeah,
it might help the place. Y'all go ahead. Boy, we come back double color, bleeding like a sunbitch. Yeah. And sure enough, I ran right into Luger, who was standing there. Yeah. And when he saw me, he just didn't know what to think.
Yeah.
It just happened. I don't think he got it.
Yeah.
But one of the things that always got me, when you went into that ring, that dirty-ass canvas that guys had sweat on, had blood on, there's bloodstains there. They barely washed it.
We're lucky we're not all dead.
Yeah. You guys been walking around the dressing room on piss stains and, you know, showers and then through the aisle, all the bullshit. But, you know, once you get on that mat, there's nothing like a smell of a wrestling canvas.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel at home. There's nothing like it.
You just gave, you want to hear the home run story?
This is it, and we're going home.
Home run story, right? So, Ashley and Reed's mom, right?
Yeah.
Calls Tiffany, right? And said, "I need you to come over to the house." Because they actually got along, okay, right? And so she goes, "I was watching the History Channel last night, and one of 100 million people has this gene where nothing, where they never get sick or never get up." I said, Rick should have AIDS. He should have every hepatitis C. He's going to outlive us both. We're not going to get our insurance money." I got the gene. Nice. I called Hunter and said, "I guess I got the gene." So that's like a joke going on now. The History Channel, I got the gene.
They're saying the damn match of the damn dirtiest things in the world, but once you get in there and you get on top of that thing and you start wrestling,
you don't even think about it.
But you love it because the smell, that's home.
Yeah.
And hell, talking about smelling a dirty ass, bloody, sweaty, piss stained mat, I'm talking with the Nature Boy Ric Flair.
Yeah. We
hooked up last night at the WWE 2K14 video game release, and things started off there and ended up to hear, and I've been talking to him for several hours. We want to make a couple of, as you guys have noticed, number one more time, Mo, that's a piece of shit. Anyway, wrapping this whole thing up, Rick, we got together last night at the WWE 2K14 video game release, and we had a blast. We were just talking in the dressing room before we went out there, the green room, rather, and I was like, "God, we better save some of this for the show."
Yeah.
And, man, this is the longest I've ever sat down and talked with you in the time that I've known you. And you and I have never traveled the roads together.
Nope.
We've wrestled together a couple of times.
We've had a few beers together.
Yeah. But I mean, but nothing really sit down with no bar, you know, people bothering us.
Because when guys like you and I socialize, we don't talk about business.
Right.
You're talking about something else.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. Yeah. Anything.
There's two things you don't do. You don't talk about politics, the business, or religion when you're drinking.
Yeah, you're right about that.
You know where to win.
Yeah, there's no way to win.
All you do, you end up knocking somebody you don't want to knock.
And it's a divisive line. Yeah. Everybody has their beliefs.
Yeah.
But you know what? I appreciate you doing the show, and I've enjoyed talking to you because, again, I'm telling Mo, I was doing my research, thinking about all this stuff, and I said, "Man, I'm just going to talk to this guy because I'm a fan. And I love the business, and we both do. So I know that my listeners can be happy that you came on the show. We dropped so much 411. If you ever like to be a fly on the wall, this was a conversation that you're lucky you were that fly. I want to thank everybody for downloading the show. Rick, you got anything else? I've been meaning to push your Twitter account. It's Ric Flair Nature Boy, and it's Ric Flair, N-A-T-R Boy, on Twitter. And, of course, you can go to RicFlair.com. And he also had his book he wrote a long time ago. He ain't read, I ain't read. It's called To Be the Man. It's about the greatest professional wrestler that ever walked on God's green earth. And that's the bottom line because I'm saying it. You got any parting words, any words of wisdom, anything you'd like to get off your chest, say?
I'll just say thank you for this moment because I adore you as a human being, as a man. And I would hope that we both, while I'm not getting married again, I hope you stay married.
I am.
Okay. Yeah. We're both in there four times, right? So,
yes, sir.
Yeah, you stay married. I'm 4-0, so, okay. And that's really enjoyed this, and it brings back memories of what I consider the greatest career in the world. I think I've had it.
You have, and I had a good time doing it as well. For the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, it's Steve Austin. I'm going to come back with Gimme Mo Darwich and wrap this whole shenanigan
we
up.
We are limousine riding, jet flying, kiss stealing, wheeling dealing, son of a guns, that tonight I might, Steve not going to, kiss some girl in L.A. and make her cry. Steve's going home.
I'm going home. I'm ready to take my wife out to eat. I'm coming back with Mo to wrap this thing up. Nature Boy Ric Flair, the greatest of all time.
Hey, man, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
Woo! Man, go give me another one, Mo.
Woo!
I feel like I've been chopped 163 times on my chest. I feel like I've been launched off 1,000 turnbuckles and taken 1,500 backdrops talking to the one and only Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Mo, give me another one.
Woo!
Styling and profiling with my favorite pro wrestler of all time. Mo, how was that for you? Fly on the wall like a sumbitch, running the controls in stealth mode. You was digging that, wasn't you?
Oh, it does not get any better than that. If you would have told me 10 years ago that I would be in a room with Stone Cold Steve Austin and the Nature Boy Ric Flair listening to the greatest stories of the past, I'd have a CGF of 25.
CGF 25. I think it's damn near lethal.
It
might have died.
I just died right there in a pool of my own shit.
Again, you know, that's the longest time I've ever talked to Ric Flair. And, you know, in doing the research, starting to read about him, I watched, you know, 20, 30 matches just to bring myself back up to speed. But, you know, the conversation happened as it did and just went from one thing to another. The thing about it is, with a career like Ric Flair had, we could talk to that guy for another 3, 4, 5, 6 hours. Hopefully down the road we will. If I saw all you people out there saying, well, you didn't talk about this, you didn't talk about that. I'm planning on bringing Ric Flair back to the Steve Austin Show. I mean, there's just too much to talk about. And, man, a wealth of information, Mo, and a wealth of stories. We probably just only scratched the surface with that guy.
Oh, barely even touched the surface. He's so great. I could probably count 20 times in the entire interview where he said, oh, I got a great story for that. And it was a great story.
I know. Every time I said it, I said, well, go ahead and tell it. I start smiling because Ric Flair tells it is a great storyteller.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's why he's so great in the ring. And I tell you what, when we started talking about promos and all the other stuff, I mean, you know, that guy believes that he's a Nature Boy Ric Flair, and that's why he sold the tickets that he did. And that's why, I guess that's why I bought into his routine. And that's why he was my favorite. I just dug the guy.
You know, it's the attention to detail that he put into his character. He was saying $8,000 for a robe.
Back when he didn't have $8,000.
Yeah. And then you brought a pair of his boots into the room, and they were custom made. Gorgeous looking leather boots. I'm sitting there thinking, how much were those? Those are crazy.
Man, I tell you what, that guy, he's something else. And it was great to catch up to him. We had a lot of fun there on the 2K14,
yeah.
The video game release. You know, much success to that game. It was fun being there on the panel. Things kind of got a little out of control, some people thought, but it was so entertaining, Mo. There were so entertaining that I had so much feedback over it that I think they're going to sell 1 million video games.
You know, it's so crazy. I know WWE wasn't happy with that, but the press that you got out of that is what was worth. That's why you bring Ric Flair. Eyeballs want to see that guy do something, and
well,
he did something.
You know, they told him to go out there and be Ric Flair and have a good time, and he did. So
yeah.
Enough said, and if they want anything different, they should have said it. I'm in Ric Flair's corner on this one.
I saw that video game. You're like the headliner of that game, too.
Dude, I was all jacked up, wasn't I?
Dude, you
look like I've been in a gym with a swell on.
You look good in a computer, dude.
I'm going to get that figurine to wrestle for me in WrestleMania 30 and call it a day. Send a paycheck to 316 Gimmick Street. I'll be there eating Alpha Brain and Shroom Tech Sport, working out, trying to look like I did in a video game.
You know, it's funny, eventually, because they're doing that with movies now, where they're bringing back, like, older actors. They did it with Tron. With Jeff Bridges, they had a computer-animated younger version of himself. I could see you just at your house with the microphone in front of you, just controlling your computer-animated Steve Austin and whooping everyone's ass.
If they would have given me that computer-controlled gimmick about 20 years ago, it would have been good. I wouldn't be feeling like I do now. I'm just kidding. I feel like $1 million. But that being said, Mo, what's your Twitter handle?
At Mo Darwich, man. The fans have been great. You know, I'm getting a lot of your fans following me. They're all really great people. The conversation's been great. You know what they're talking a lot about?
Is
the WCW NWO video game.
Really?
There's a lot of talk about that.
A lot of talk about the video game.
We might have to play the new 2K14 here in the studio.
Yeah, you know what? I'll talk to Bryce, my hookup over there, and get us a video game, and we'll talk about it here on the Steve Austin Show. Hell, I'm Steve Austin, BSR on Twitter. You can follow me there. Don't forget to check out the BSRscope.com, my 4x12x50 Miopta hunting scope. My very own scope that I use on my South Texas rig at the Broken Skull Ranch. I'm also on the BrokenSkullRanch.com, and that's all I got to say about that. Mo, cue me up some music. Let's send off with a little bit of vibration in the form of music. Yeah, hear that, folks? That means it's time for me to get on my damn horse and get the fuck out of Dodge. Until the next one, that's Steve Austin. I catch you sorry ass down the road.
Woo!